With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Restaurateurs, it's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century, from I Love Lucy to News Radio. I am your TV guide, Brett White, and this week I am joined by Winston Noel. Hello, Winston.
Hey, Brett. Excited to be here.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming out here on a really rainy, rainy
day. I told you, I have literally been looking forward to not to use literally already out of the gate, but I have been looking forward to this all day long.
Yes.
I'm excited.
You're in my office, my sitcom office, and I have a sitcom corner I'm starting
yes.
over there.
I love it.
Which has a relevant to this to the, today's episode, Moose Frame Photo.
Oh, yeah. Listener, Brett's not messing around.
No, I'm serious. this week on the show, we are traveling to May 16th, 1995. Crimson Tide ruled the box office. This Is How We Do It by Montel Jordan topped the charts, which is
oh
a specific
God.
I love.
That's fantastic.
And Frasier aired The Innkeepers. You must have seen The Innkeepers before.
I have.
Okay.
I have seen every Cheers episode and every Frasier episode.
So you are in the... It's like Glenn and Les Charles verse.
I guess so.
Jim
yeah.
Burrows verse.
When they came on Netflix, I would just watch. I would turn something on when I was doing the dishes or
yeah.
cleaning the bathroom, and it's just so it was so easy to do other things, but still like
yeah.
be paying attention to it. That I just. Burn through everything.
You go all the way in order? All Cheers and all Frasier?
Yeah, I'd never seen... I'd seen, like, some out-of-order episodes of Cheers and maybe a few out-of-order things of Frasier.
Oh.
But then I was like, I'm just gonna... Because it was... You know, they would play, like... I can't remember what channel it would play on rerun. I just worked all through. So I remember when you mentioned the episode, I looked it up and I was like, oh, yes, I remember.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So when it was on in 1995, what was your stance on Must See TV in 95?
I didn't really watch a lot of it. Similar to you, I grew up in a quite religious household,
oh, yeah, yeah.
a very sheltered household. And my parents weren't very into pop culture in general. It just wasn't their bag.
Yeah.
So we watched a lot of Andy Griffith's show, Happy Day, like a lot
so
of
you
old...
you dumped into that Nick at Night.
Yeah, we watched a lot of Nick at Night. And I didn't watch as much, and I was also studying a lot, so I didn't watch as much, like...
Nerd!
I was really a nerd. I didn't, on weeknights, I didn't really watch that much TV, or if I did, it would be in the beginning of the afternoon,
yeah.
like cartoons and stuff.
I mean, I was obsessed with television. I always feel like
yeah.
I was raised Southern Baptist, but my parents weren't, like, that strict
yeah.
about it. We were, like, surfing. Because I couldn't watch Simpsons.
Yeah, I wasn't allowed to watch Simpsons either.
That was, and like Ren and Stimpy, I couldn't
yeah.
watch. But then other than that, I learned like, I'll just not let them know some things
right,
I watch.
Right, exactly.
And then we watched Friends together. I famously grew up hating Frasier because
oh,
I didn't watch it as a kid. And then I hated it because every single year it won the Emmy for Best Comedy.
That's when I started like knowing what it was.
And I got so mad because I was on the Friends and Seinfeld train. And I was like, they're better shows. I don't like Frasier's. They're just snooty.
Yeah, I know. I felt the same way. And that was, I felt like, award season was the only time I really was aware of Frasier.
Because
it was like, oh, they always win.
Every year. I've never
seen it.
I think it's like the first 5 years of Frasier wins Best Comedy.
Yeah.
Every year.
It's really good.
Yeah, it is. So it deserves it.
No, but, you know, I didn't realize, like, I came to it much, much later, which is probably good. Watching this episode, I was like, I wouldn't know what the fuck is going on.
No, I don't know.
Can I say that on this?
Yes,
okay,
of course,
okay.
A million times.
But yeah, I mean, I was watching Andy Griffith and, like, cartoons. You know, I wasn't...
Yeah. That's the thing I want to tell when we get to discussing the episode. There's like there's this dichotomy of what you think Frasier is and then what it actually is. Because as a kid, I thought, that's all snooty. And they talk about opera and like, that's all for smart people who just think they're too good. And you watch it and it's like, it's dumb. Like it's...
Oh, yeah.
It's super goofy.
Yeah.
It is Three's Company dressed up for like a night at the opera.
It's farce. It's great. I do think it's funny. Like something I was thinking about is like... kind of, and this is maybe, but like America's history of like, you're smart and pretentious, we will ridicule you.
Yeah.
I wonder, I have not seen a full episode of The Big Bang Theory, but this Big Bang Theory feels like Frasier's meaner spiritual successor. Like, I think Frasier's about like intellectuals and... But it's not that being an intellectual is bad. It's being a snob is bad.
Yeah, being a jerk about it.
Yeah, but Big Bang Theory to me is just like, look at these nerds.
Yeah.
But it feels like the same sort of thing where it's like that kind of arcane speak and all that kind of stuff. But it's a lot meaner, I think. And again, I haven't really watched it, but the parts I have watched, it's like, oh, they're making like X-Men references and people are like laughing that they're making an X-Men reference.
We will never talk about it because it's a 21st century show and also
bad. And also fuck that show.
Screw it to hell.
Yeah.
And also like growing up in Tennessee, I feel like Frasier just doesn't play.
I didn't understand. What?
In Tennessee?
Yeah. Sherry? What is even, you know, I just didn't understand.
Eels, cherries, Jubilee.
Yeah.
It's like they're not going to a Red Lobster or an Outback.
No,
so I don't know.
It
or
didn't,
Cooker.
But...
Did y'all have the Cooker?
I don't think
I'm trying to figure out where Cooker was a franchise.
I mean, I'm trying to think. We went to the same Mexican restaurant, and then we go to Fuddruckers.
Oh, we have Fuddruckers. Yeah, Fuddruckers.
Fuddruckers was like...
But isn't there also a Pudruckers? No, Pudfuckers? No, Fuddruckers? No, I don't... There's something that's also like Fuddruckers, but it's not.
Yeah. I don't doubt it. Fuddruckers didn't corner the market. burgers and arcades.
Yeah, and like weird kind of cuss word names.
Yeah, right.
So on the restaurant tip, let's get into... this week on Must Have Seen TV, we are talking about the Frasier episode, The Innkeepers. It's the 23rd episode of season 2. It was written by David Lloyd and directed by James Burrows. Here is how Netflix describes the episode. When Frasier and Niles learn that one of their favorite restaurants is closing, they make reservations to dine there that evening. How accurate is that description?
Not accurate at all.
That description is literally the cold open.
Yeah. That
of
is
the show.
First beat up. I think I remember that while looking at Netflix things from Frasier. Is that it was always like, what? The tags are terrible.
Sometimes these are really, really spot on, and then sometimes, the most infamous one is the Golden Girls one, which is Sophia buys tickets for the ladies. And that tells you nothing about that episode.
I don't know, whose responsibility is it to make those?
I think they're provided by the production companies or networks, because a lot of the time they are universal. Like, I'm pretty sure... Uh-huh. That is also the description that is on iTunes,
and on Netflix.
Yeah, so I think that it's provided by the company and not like a Netflix thing. They should have hired a Frasier specialist to really go through it.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. I think it's their prerogative. It feels like a writer's prerogative. Like, we don't want to give the whole story away. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
you can see, like, they decide to buy the restaurant.
Yeah.
Because that's what the episode is. Like, that's not a spoiler. That's in the trailers for the episode.
Yeah, exactly.
So this episode is ridiculous.
It's bonkers.
Because if you think Frasier, you think psychologist and radio show.
Yeah.
And this is an episode where they just become restaurant owners.
It's so crazy that they changed careers in the first act of the show.
Literally in between scenes.
Yeah.
They find out the restaurant is closing, and then they go there. It's horrible. And then they're like, we should buy it next scene. Like, even, like, the act break is them having bought the restaurant already.
Yeah.
It's crazy how quick it goes.
It's so nuts. And they sometimes, I remember watching Frasier that they sometimes, they do have a passage of time. You know, it's one of those shows where, like, things are, it's not perpetual, like, things are moving forward because it's so long running.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so what's going on? Because the restaurant is, it's kind of a fade-in where it's completely redone.
Yeah.
And it's like, how much money, like,
in time.
I'm still not quite sure how the Crane brothers.
Oh, did you see my Facebook? I like went off on this of like, because Frasier loses his job in like season five, and he's just not concerned about getting a new job for many, many episodes.
Yeah.
And it's like, you have a 3-bedroom apartment overlooking the Space Needle in Seattle.
Yeah.
And
Livin'
Help, who is your father's care, physical therapist, but you treat her like a maid. Which is also some like weird gender politics.
Right. Which is like, I think they just ran it. They were like,
she's a maid.
She's a maid.
Whatever. I always rationalize it as like, she probably stays there rent free. Because I'd be like, I'll stay here rent free and I'll just like do your laundry and make you a dinner.
Right.
And I'm a bad cook and you don't care.
Right.
Okay. So I don't know, like, that opening just asks the question of how much disposable income do they have to sink into a restaurant on a whim.
But this is the only time it feels like they do weird stuff, but
this is a whole new level.
It's really weird.
So, yeah, the episode starts out with Gil Chesterton, who I want to, and I'll get into all this. I had a weird crush fascination on Gil Chesterton in middle school, high school.
Checks out a little bit.
Yeah, I don't anymore.
Not physically, but like,
part of me wonders if how much of this was like me being closeted.
Yeah.
And it, like, I was like that guy's too obviously gay.
Yeah.
And what's his deal?
Yeah.
It was very like a weird thing with my head. And I also had a crush on John Mahoney, who plays the father.
Oh, yes.
And I still do. He is a very handsome
man. He's great.
He's so great. He's super handsome.
He seems like he'd be an absolute sweetheart.
Also, this is the other thing. I keep wanting to, like, get to the plot, but I keep getting sidetracked.
No.
Like, 4 gay men in this one episode, because Gil Chesterton, the guy that plays Bulldog, and David Hyde Pierce all confirmed gay.
Oh, right.
And then John Mahoney... most likely,
yes,
rumors,
a lot of rumors,
a lot of non-confirmation either way, and a lot of, like, he's never been married, and, like, it's an open secret.
It's like a Kevin Spacey sort of...
Yeah. That exact same thing, because when I was tweeting about, like, it would mean a lot to me if John Mahoney would come out, which is a weird... If you'll invade your personal space, it will make me feel
Dredge
good.
Dredge this up, please.
But it's, as a gay man that has so few gay icons and gay role models, I'm like, if John Mahoney was gay, that would mean a lot. Who famously played.
Yeah.
Very, like, masculine.
Well,
that'd be so cool.
Bulldog. It's just really interesting. Yeah. I'd forgotten that Bulldog was gay.
I remember learning that from, like, Entertainment Tonight or something, where they were like, here's this guy, he's actually gay!
Yeah. And Gil, the whole, Gil's whole bit was his, like,
his wife. But,
I don't think we ever met her, did we?
No, we never did. And I think they got divorced later on, and he might have come out in
I think he did.
Like, very towards the end. There's also the gay panic episode where Frasier keeps having, like, sexy dreams about Gil.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Which is also great.
Well, they also have to always deal with, like, Niles and Frasier. Like, they always, there's that.
Because they're all, there's
several times.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of good episodes about that.
Yeah.
And there's also an episode where, someone sets Frasier's dad, Marty, up with a guy. That's a great episode, too.
That is a good one.
So, yeah, Gil is, like, reviewing the restaurant, or he says, what is the name of the restaurant?
Orsini?
Because I wrote down Orsino's, Rossini's, and Orsini's.
I think it was Orsini's, but I could be wrong.
We could just call it the restaurant.
The restaurant. The Italian restaurant.
The Italian restaurant. French restaurant.
Oh, God.
Wait, no. Was it originally in Italian, then it went to French?
I think the name they came up with, the Happy Brothers, is French.
It was one of the title cards.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember what it was. And so as soon as he hears that, Frasier's like,
Niles, tonight, let's go to Orsini's for one glorious farewell dinner. Why not? I'll make the reservations.
So him and Niles and Marty and Daphne all go to dinner that night, and it's just like they remembered it, except a lot shittier.
Yeah. The thing I was struck by, I guess because we're seeing it, I was just like, this set is massive.
Oh, yeah, I wrote big set underlined.
Yeah.
Because U-Walk is huge.
Huge stage.
I want to know if that was either left over from another show. I wonder if that could have been the impetus for this episode. It's like, hey, we got this huge-ass restaurant set on the lot next door.
I wouldn't doubt it, because that thing was huge.
Yeah,
and
it was, like, had
depth of field. It
was,
like, very...
I mean, there's probably 20 tables in there.
I totally think that could be it, because there was that whole back area that wasn't really used. It was just very, like, it was a very strange sort
very
of...
deep.
Set up.
Because I know that Golden Girls, the kitchen of the Golden Girls set, was used in a show that only lasted one season.
I don't know why.
And it was like just, when they made the Golden Girls pilot, it was only like living room and other sets. And then a draft later, like really close to production, they were like, oh, we now have a scene in the kitchen. Ugh. They like combed through the files. Like, we have this kitchen. And so they just brought that kitchen and added it onto the house. And then that became the Golden Girls kitchen. So I know there's a precedent. They do that.
Yeah.
So they go there and like their old waiter is still there. Otto, who remembers.
Isn't that Otto? Oh, my God, I believe it is. You know, Otto is legendary here. He's been with them forever. He never writes a single thing down. He keeps it all in his head. Otto!
Oh, coming up.
Your check, sir.
That was great.
Yeah.
They had a very... he was a great kind of side character, though.
And they really build up his failing memory all the way to the end.
Yeah.
As soon as Frasier, like, puts him in charge of being the valet, it's like, what are you doing? What are you doing, you dumbass?
Yeah. There were definitely a few times where I was like, what? Like, you guys...
I don't know. What job could Otto have done with that bad man? Because they were like, Frasier's like, he's been around for so long, I didn't want to fire him.
Yeah.
He's very sweet, we like him.
I don't know.
What job in a restaurant requires you to not have a memory?
I guess, like, be more of a janitorial. I don't know.
Clean up this toilet.
I mean, reservations, all you have to do is write them down, but I feel like that could get complicated.
But he also, like, he doesn't really, every time Frasier calls him on the walkie-talkie, he's like, who's this?
Yeah, that's
true. And it hides to, like, Frasier being like,
Otto, quick, bring car 23 and hurry!
Who is this?
It's the voice of God!
Which is a great line.
It was great.
I'm the only one on this. I mean, it's a walkie-talkie.
I want to point out that Niles goes in there and he talks about how his 8th birthday was at this restaurant.
Yes.
Where was your 8th birthday at? I'm trying to think.
I don't know.
I turned 8 in like 93. So mine was 93. In East Tennessee at my grandparents' cabin with my cousins, and we had a July 4th cake, and like we played on the river.
That's fun. Yeah, I'm sure. I don't know. There were a few birthdays where I felt like my parents had pressure, so I went to like a basketball game with some people.
Yeah.
Like a Hawks game, which is like a huge deal. I had never been to one ever. So
but you never went to a
I never went to
Italian French restaurant, 4-star restaurant.
Yeah. I do love the joke where he sent the 8-year-old Niles sent the veal back.
Yeah.
That's a great character joke.
Yeah, because also in the cold open of the episode, like, Niles comes in with, like, a first edition Steinbeck.
Yeah.
What is the joke? Where, like, Roz wants to come up and touch it. They're like, no, don't touch it. You'll get oils all over it. And then he insults her.
He just makes
that. Oh, Niles, guess what? Thriving Seattle night spot is closing its doors.
Roz, you're moving.
So she licks it?
She licks it.
Just straight up licks it?
I was, when I saw that, it was great. I was also thinking, like, I was sort of sad because I was like, Frasier had its hang-ups, but the fact that you can drop a John Steinbeck novel, they used the word neophyte and didn't explain what it meant.
Yeah.
It was just, and you know, I know you have all the viewership and all that kind of stuff, but it was like so many people were watching this thing that was like, these guys were snobs, but they didn't dumb They didn't say like who's John Stein, you know, like it's like this is a Steinbeck. It wasn't the Grapes of Wrath. It was a very specific.
It was like
niche. It's like a little novella,
like
or
the
something.
Little Virgin.
Virgin,
but I don't think it's the Little Virgin.
I think some sort of. I don't know. It felt like it was like a very obscure.
Yeah.
John Steinbeck reference was just like, I don't know. There's a part of me that's like, oh, that would never, ever, ever, ever be on network TV now.
No, because you have to explain everything.
Yeah.
This is where like your Netflix and Amazon's come into play, where they don't have to.
Right.
They're like niche by definition, and so they know like, well, we can make these references because we're not trying to please advertisers.
Absolutely. But knowing what you know about the show, like about the country now, and probably the country then, it's insane that this was as popular as it was.
It makes no sense.
What we watched was a theater farce.
Yeah.
was like a Neil Simon play.
Yeah, it felt a lot like the Cheers episode Woody's Wedding.
Yes.
Where it's
I was
all
thinking
in
the
kitchen.
Exact same
kitchens
thing.
Are great.
Yeah.
Because you got those swinging doors.
Yeah.
Swinging doors
where the priest died.
Yeah.
I was thinking the exact same way. I was like, oh, this is like Woody's Wedding part two.
I should have looked up and seen if David Lloyd wrote that. Because David Lloyd, I do want to look this up real quick. Because this episode was written by David Lloyd, who...
He was a big
guy,
right?
Mary Tyler Moore guy.
Oh, no way.
Because during this year, I've been rewatching all these shows.
Oh, yeah. I read Brett's fantastic article about... What's the series called? Sorry, Brett. It's the gay episode.
Oh, that gay episode
that
on Decider.com.
Yes, there you go. But yeah, he was the guy who wrote the Phyllis's brother, right?
No, that was that is
somebody else.
That is
okay.
Roger Moore
playing
his brother. David Lloyd. All these men have such like 70s, Robert Moore, David Lloyd.
Yeah, exactly.
David Lloyd wrote Chuckles Bites the Dust.
Oh, wow.
Like, he wrote what is arguably the greatest sitcom episode of all time.
Yep.
And that was 20 years before this.
Wow, that is
so
crazy.
It's crazy that he... So, like, I think you might have started out, like, as a staff writer on Mary Tyler Moore. Like, that was his first gig. Your first gig is Mary Tyler Moore, and you write Chuckles Bites
the
Dust. 20 years later... He comes in on Frasier like once or twice a season and just like hits it out of the park for them.
Yeah,
and he's billed as like creative consultant for every episode.
Oh, right.
So it was cool watching because I think I watched all of Mary Tyler Moore and all of Frasier back to back, and it was cool to see like his career like
that's cool.
You know, Padawan learner to Jedi.
yeah, exactly. No, I am right there with you.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is crazy because there's other. This isn't the only sort of broad farce Frasier episode.
Yeah.
I think they do one like this in like a central location. Like there's the cabin one.
Yeah, the ski lodge one, which
that I remember
is
fondly.
Just ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's everyone wants to hook up with everyone else and everyone thinks someone else is trying to hook up with them and it's just.
But these are like old theater. Like this is like old comedy trope that's what the other thing I love about it too, and you know, it's funny because but improv stuff. Whenever I teach or coach improv, the thing I kind of say is like, guys, I'm sorry to break it to you, but this is theater.
Yeah.
Like it is, we're doing theater. I know
you're on a stage.
I know you don't want it to be, some of you, but like it is theater and those performance elements are like really important. And it is interesting to see kind of like I listened to the first episode with you and Matt, and you were talking about these are one act plays.
Yeah,
like this is a one act play. This was.
I honestly, and it might be because Frasier is a show that has those title cards, so when you're watching on Netflix, you actually can't tell where the commercial breaks go.
Yeah,
because it dips to black within the course of the narrative anyway.
Right.
And so, Rhea, watching this, I actually can't remember where commercials were supposed to come and go.
Yeah, it felt so fast.
Yeah. I did want to point out Jane leaves Daphne's dress during the first scene when they were at the restaurant, which was like this brown, velvety, peasanty-looking medieval dress with like puffy sleeves.
No
Frasier's the fashion on Frasier is
you know the person
wild.
who looks the best is Marty Crane.
Yeah.
He's the one who's like, oh, he looks normal.
Yeah.
Everybody else looks
and I feel
insane
because like he always just wears like. plaid shirt
and like khakis,
and like a cool belt,
and like a
Denver
jacket,
jacket. He looks like there is a towards like the year 2000, they start giving him them pleated khakis, and those pleats just take over,
and
it drives me crazy because I watched All Frasier in February.
Oh wow,
that's like 200 something episodes.
Yeah.
So I got to see the fashion evolve in real time, and it's like, no, but just look how good he looks there with clothes that fit him.
Yeah.
And same thing with like all the suits, like Frasier and Niles are just
wearing
these huge, brat like tan suits all the time with like paisley ties.
Oh god, it's horrible. I saw it and I was like, oh, I thought this was much later. As soon as it came on, I was like, oh, he's got early Frasier hair.
Yeah, he's got the
like,
long.
Oh, it's so gross.
Yeah, the weird.
Oh, it's so gross.
Well, I don't know what that is. It's just all like dangling there.
He looks very handsome when it's all cut and like fine. But it's like a BC. You know,
it's like pre-haircut, post-haircut.
But yeah, I feel like I definitely was like, oh, this is a lot earlier in the show than I thought.
Yeah.
And it's crazy that they were doing this kind of stuff that early in.
So, like, they decide on a whim, basically, to buy the restaurant, and we're at opening night, and then, basically, now we're in the one at, like, the...
Yeah.
The motto scene to get to improv.
Yeah.
Like, it is a motto scene.
Totally.
Or, I guess, like, a macro scene. Well, I guess on a motto scene, you could have two locations. No, it'd be one location. You don't go through a wall on a motto scene like that.
I guess not.
So, I guess it might be, like, a more of a macro
scene. I mean, you could have... The kitchen would be taking, if we're thinking straight up UCB, the kitchen would be taking place backstage, or like, you'd flip it around, you have to play with the space. And
But yeah, you just see the episode, you know, we don't see Eddie in this episode, we don't see the Crane's apartment building at all.
No.
It's just at the Happy Brothers.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna attempt that friendship.
No.
And it just, everything of course goes wrong.
Yeah.
And it goes wrong in just farcical, amazing ways.
Yeah. But I think the great part about it is that it goes wrong. It's their fault.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's what I liked about it. It wasn't like, things went crazy. It was like, oh, because that I feel like is maybe, for me at least, like the first thing I do is like, oh, there's wacky things, external conflict.
Yeah.
But it's like, oh, no, this is all of their own making. Like, the whole thing is...
Everything is because the very, very first thing is them being like, oh...
Yes, Chef Maurice has really outdone himself. The menu simply cannot be improved upon.
I agree.
Mm. Unless it would be to add just a soupçon of brandy to the Cherry's Jubilee.
Yeah.
And then throughout the rest of the episode, they each go back to that thing multiple times to just be like, well, a little bit more.
Yeah.
A little bit more. Which culminates.
So yeah.
Which culminates in a huge explosion. Off camera, like we're in the kitchen, we see like a big flash of light.
Right.
And then Roz walks in. Full, like, Looney Tunes dynamite.
It was so... I was like, wait, no. That
her
can't
hair,
be.
Her hair is huge and black.
And
her face is covered in, like, soot. And she's just like, big flash. Oh.
I was shocked. Because everything else was, like, pretty believable.
Yeah.
Like, I sort of bought everything. And all the conflicts seemed like... Oh, yeah, and even with the alcohol, I was like, oh, that's funny. But then her coming in like that was just, I feel like, a bridge too far.
It was great, but
it was like, guys.
It happens in there's this amazing quick succession as things are going wrong. Like, everything starts going wrong when, Frasier tries to use the indoor when he's going out, or like Niles tries it and he like hits a waiter, and then Frasier on the other side like, oh no, we have to get him back in, and he tries to use the outdoor to go in, he hits another waiter, and so they're both out, and then they pass the chef hood down the line of succession to the next guy.
Oh, make us proud, got a very important clientele out here.
Yes, governor's table alone, we have two state senators and the head of the immigration bureau.
So
to which they all
run,
book it. How does that joke play now?
Like, it sort of works.
Yeah.
And here's why. Because, again, the indoor and the outdoor and the immigration thing, it's like, oh, these are people who don't know restaurants. Like,
yeah,
they
fundamental. They just
the reason that they didn't know the indoor and the outdoor... That causes the first thing. And then the other, like, reality that they're not willing to take in is that, a lot of the help in restaurants
are
immigrants
undocumented
immigrants. So to me, it was less of like a, I think it punched the right way
where
it was like they were dumb, you know, like you shouldn't say that to your staff, you know, and less of like, can you believe these Mexicans? You know, it wasn't that.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe I don't know. Did you feel like it kind of didn't hit correctly?
No, I think it hit fine. I just
the living nightmare that we live in.
I hear about like immigration and it's just like ping, 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 ping.
Oh yeah,
ping,
no, absolutely.
So to the, like, Marty's going to be the bartender,
yes.
And they're like, who are we going to get to be the waiter? And then Roz comes in with her date, Diedrich Bader from the Drew Carey Show and more recently Veep.
Oh, that's right.
And this is 95, so this is like a year before he got. I mean, this is like working actor, Diedrich
mm-hmm.
Bader. Wait, what was his big? Oh, he was also Jethro in the Beverly Hillbillies movie.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
right.
And he was, and more recently, he's been the voice of Batman.
That's right. He was in Brave and the Bold and stuff. Yeah,
and I think maybe some of the movies, when they don't get Kevin Connery for.
Oh yeah.
It was cool to see him, and he has one line. Like, it's definitely not a, like, oh, we're going to get him in because we know he can do this well. It's because he auditioned and wanted to work
back. I do feel like I understood, because I was like, oh, he's quite handsome. I felt like he seemed more like heartthrobby, which I had never really, I mean, he's a good-looking man, this is him as like a, I can be like the romantic lead, which
and
I don't think
he
ever really.
Then you got Drew Carey and they gave him breasts for a season.
Yeah.
Remember that? Did you ever watch Drew Carey?
I didn't really get that into Drew Carey.
I was very into Drew Carey. We can't ever do that show on this podcast because can't find it anywhere.
That's weird.
Season one is available on like iTunes and Amazon and that is it. And that show ran for like 9 years.
Why? Do you know? That's strange.
You can go to decider.com and look at my article
about
30 sitcoms, and only 6 of them are on Hulu or Netflix.
That's crazy.
You can buy a lot of them on Amazon.
Yeah.
Basically, if you want to watch a 90s show, you're going to have to either get DVDs or be willing to pay for digital episodes.
Yeah.
Huh. And that's very frustrating. Frasier, on the other hand, is available literally everywhere.
Yeah.
It is the one show of all that is on like Hulu, Amazon, Netflix, iTunes.
Wild.
Like, it is everywhere.
Yeah.
So like Niles then is all of a sudden the chef. And another really great thing, this isn't a really good episode for like planting seeds early on.
Yes.
I think they mentioned like up top that this chef was like known for cooking eel.
Yeah.
One of the title cards is like no eels were harmed during making this episode, which watching it a second time and knowing that there's a scene where Daphne bashes one, and you're like, oh, that's such a fun like precursor to what we know is gonna happen. And so Niles has to cook eel.
Yeah.
Which results in, the reason that I maybe chose this episode is the scenes of Niles and Daphne trying to kill all these eels.
Yeah.
Niles is looming over. Well, first of all, Frasier, Niles is like, how am I going to...
Every restaurant critic in Seattle is out there and they all want anguilas, so start killing eels.
Wait. How do you suggest I do that?
How do I know? You're the chef. Throw a toaster in the damn tank for all I care.
Right there with them. He leaves, and as soon as he goes out, there's the lights flicker.
Yeah, that was a great...
That's a great joke.
That's a great joke. There was so much physical... That was this thing I was super impressed with. Because, again, we're looking at it through, like, the production lens, too. And I was just like, I wonder... Because it feels like with something like that, you can kind of only do it in one take.
They had to rehearse it so many times.
I know, but like when she grabbed that eel and smacks it, and then, or when they're also like tossing the veal around.
Yeah, like a customer like, it's like, oh, I wanted, was it veal marsala or pork marsala?
It was like veal piccata and I wanted veal marsala.
So they take it back in, Frasier like hands the dish to Niles, who throws it to Daphne, who rinses it off in the sink, and then while she's doing that, Niles is like wiping off the plate. He, like, holds the plate back out. She throws the veal back on the plate. And then he, like, scoops the marsala and hands it off to Frasier. And it's maybe 10 seconds.
Yeah. Have you ever worked in a restaurant before?
No.
That is... Yeah.
What? Is that what happened? Oh, man. The innkeeper's blowing the roof off of this.
No, I was watching and I was like, oh, whoever wrote this has definitely worked in a restaurant. Because that sort of, like, who the fuck cares? Like, we'll just put it in. Like,
it's also ridiculous now that I'm thinking about it, because I know my mom always wants steak well done, and she would always get it with a little bit of pink.
Yeah.
And so she would always, 100%, which is also, like, I understand her frustration, because every time she orders steak, it's always wrong.
Right.
I was there witness. But she would then complain when they come about, they just put this in the microwave. I can tell. And now I'm thinking, like, why would you expect them to then cook you a whole new steak.
They wouldn't do that.
And
they,
also that it would take a third of the time magically.
Yeah. I worked at a steakhouse where they would, it was the Ruth's Chris Steakhouse.
Oh yeah, that's a chain.
Yeah. I worked at the one in the Embassy Suites Hotel in Atlanta.
Ooh.
On the Centennial Park.
Hey.
But yeah, I did it for like a few months to be able to move to New York. But, they would heat the plate and you could cut your steak and then press it down into the plate and it would like cook it more.
Oh, wow. That's magic.
That's how hot it was. And I also was clearing all the plates. So I had like burning burns all over my hands.
Restaurants are a nightmare.
But I think the other thing with to counter your mom, I think they would like, we'll see if she really wants it well, because you can't uncook it.
Yeah, you can't unwell it.
Yeah. So do you know what I mean? If it's
yeah.
like, we'll make it medium well. And if she really wants it well, then we'll.
Oh, okay, that's a nice.
That I think that's probably.
And also,
they're not thinking that they're going to cook it well, and it takes longer, so they want to make sure all the food comes out at the same
right,
time.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that's so, That's a lot of stuff that I bet Niles and Frazier didn't take into account.
They did
literally
not
at all. After the brief brownout outside, Frazier comes back in to find Niles with a cleaver leaning into the eel tank, just like. Swatting away.
Yeah. That was great.
It
was all great.
And then Daphne just walks over, reaches in, and then in one amazing motion,
yeah.
pulls it out and bangs it on the counter on her opposite side, like making
yeah.
a full sweeping motion. As like, and it just hits, and she just hands it back.
It makes
to
a huge sound. It's truly surprising.
Yeah.
Very funny.
Yeah.
And it's great. One other restaurant thing I will say. Sorry.
Did you work in some eels?
No, there's no way they only had two waiters. That was like a 30-table restaurant.
That was a huge
anyway,
restaurant.
But yeah, I mean, that's the stuff that I'm like, wow, these guys are awesome, because as great as all of our comedians are these days, like, that takes some real physical comedy to be able to do that stuff, and you don't get to do it in a lot of takes, and it has to all, like, and these sort of episodes... Because, like, you know, we write specs
we
and
try.
Stuff like that.
We
were trying, guys.
We try.
Yeah. But, like, I feel like I could construct a run-of-the-mill Frasier episode.
Yeah.
This I don't think I could ever do.
No.
Feels so difficult to make sure that you set every, like, it feels like clockwork, like a mousetrap, like that Rube Goldberg. Any more metaphors? But you know what? That's just something that I'm like, I feel like there must be a technique to this, but I just don't even know where to begin.
It's all because, like, everything is set up. Like, even the most heightened, like, after the cherry explosion. So it's like eel hitting, cherry explosion, sprinklers go off, you thinned my brown sauce.
Yeah.
And then after the sprinklers go off, everyone leaves. After everyone leaves, a car drives through.
Right.
All that happens in such quick succession. And, like, all of it was set up earlier. Like, the fact that, like, the Otto thing is, he's called Frazier at least three times.
Yeah.
It's obviously bad at what he's doing.
Right.
And so what is the heightening of that is him driving
through.
Yeah. And that's so good.
It's great. But I do feel like it's not... It's so specific. That's why it's so difficult to me. It's like, oh, we'll have eels and we'll kill eels. Like, I just feel like that feels so, because I guess they were maybe thinking, what can we kill
in a funny way?
What do you kill in a restaurant that people like, that's not like
gruesome. Like, you don't want to like slaughter a chicken.
Yeah.
Or
and what do
like,
you have?
Eel
and,
is a weird.
Yeah. And maybe that's actually true that for like fresh eel, you like kill it.
They always say, like, you need to kill, like, crawfish and shrimp and stuff. You need to just, like, it needs to die boiling, not beforehand, or, like, lobster. Oh, boy.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, that to me is something where it's, like, you know, I've written specs and can fake it through, like, an ABC plot.
Yeah.
But, like, that seems like a whole other skill level.
And there is no ABC plot in this.
No.
There's just the restaurant.
Yeah.
And it's also knowing your performers, because I know this from, like, you know, being on, like, Mod Night, the sketch on UCB and stuff, and you write a sketch, and on the page, it's like, well, this isn't funny, and it's not funny because all the jokes are physical, and you, like, were writing it for a person. So when you're writing it, you feel bad and stupid, because you're like, none of this, these aren't jokes, like, this isn't funny, and, like, when you read it, and then when it gets into the hands of the person you're writing it for, it just comes alive.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's what I was doing. And I feel like this episode, there are a lot of really, really, really great jokes.
Yeah.
So much of it is timing and physicality
Yeah.
that because, like, Daphne picks up an eel and bangs it on the counter is, I don't know, that's not a funny stage direction.
No.
And I don't even think you could picture it in your head as funny as Jane Leaves does it.
No, it's so great. She really goes overhead. Like, it's really, I mean, it was really jarring in the best sense.
Yeah.
And it was, like, all that physical stuff. I did find myself in a episode where, like, everything at the restaurant goes wrong. I found myself being surprised.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
Which I think is really nice. Like, it's, you know.
Because they really do a good job of, like, I was noticing all the times they were pouring more alcohol into the Cherry's Jubilee. But they set it off. You are so, like, they just killed an eel. Like, your brain just, you forget because so much crazy shit, and they let it punctuate it in a really smart way.
Yeah.
The episode ends with, I mean, Bulldog also shows up at the restaurant with his, like, lady and...
Prostitute?
Probably. And they sit him next to the grotto, which is next to the bathroom.
Right.
The tossed salad and scrambled eggs moment of this episode is in the wreckage of the restaurant. Bulldog is having sex in the bathroom with his lady.
Yeah.
And he comes out, shirt open, pours all these different glasses of wine into one glass of wine, sticks a flower down his pants, and then goes back for more.
Yeah. No, it is. It is. Yeah, I mean, I guess
that's
it's
the only
what
way
had
to
happen, because, yeah, they never got out of the restaurant, and they got all wet, and he, yeah.
I guess
what, my dress is
clinging to, like, saran wrap.
Yeah.
I guess also, well, if they did build this set specifically for this episode, then they're like, the entire show is in. We spent so much money on this. The entire episode has
That's true, because it is a very, again, we don't need to talk too much about this set, but it is a very expensive
set. You gotta look,
because they not only did the old set, but then they redid it.
Yeah, they did.
That's so expensive.
They had to remodel it, and they're like, well, how did they tape that? And this is also the 23rd episode of the season, and a lot of I wonder if they just had a lot of money left over from, like,
maybe.
Man, we did a lot of episodes that were just in the radio station and the apartment.
They
so.
could have had an apartment scene where they decide to buy the restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah, they could have, but they did it at the restaurant.
Yeah.
We also don't really see them decide to give up the restaurant. How does that even... It's obviously a failure, and they never mention this again.
But they must lose millions of dollars.
So much money.
I mean, it's like, the economics of it just doesn't check out.
And also, like, IRL, if two brothers did this in a... Because they treat Seattle as if it is a small social scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Because so many of the episodes are about them and their small group of upper-crust people and trying
to impress them.
You feel like after you hastily buy a restaurant and then destroy it with, like, car crash on the
first night.
The first night where all of the food critics are there.
Yeah.
You feel like, yeah, that's your thing for life.
Right.
Like, you're not going to get
nobody
past that.
Nobody ever mentions it again.
No. And they're constantly, like, trying to, like, worried about losing their status. I'm like, you guys lost it in season two. Like, that was a big swing of the
miss. Oh, man. It was so... Yeah, that... That alone really kind of overshadows the episode, and, like, because it is so, this is so impossible.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's clear that, like, we just, because, I mean, the Cheers Wedding episode takes place very organically.
Yeah.
And but this felt like just such a, like, we want to do a farce in a restaurant.
Yeah.
Really. I've been writing a one-act play. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, when I was in college, I did this one-act play about everything that goes wrong. It's like, we'll make it an episode.
Does this also, is there anything dated about this episode? I feel like, could this just happen? Could this script be just made? Like, I mean, you would still have to take the caveat of, like, these rich assholes just buy a restaurant and, like, don't care about the
brand.
Like, that's the only thing that's still, like, that was far-fetched then, it's far-fetched now.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, maybe a little bit of the slut-shaming probably wouldn't go over
as
well.
Yeah, that's a thing that I never, ever bought with Roz for some reason.
Yeah.
There's a lot of tell-don't-show with that.
Yeah.
I feel like, Blanche...
Yeah, you believe it.
You believe it with Blanche, because she also is with men a lot, and she's also proud of it.
Yeah.
And, like, it
just has, like, a...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Roz doesn't own it that way.
No.
So what it feels like is Roz is a normal dating woman, and Frasier and Niles are just dicks.
Yeah.
That's what it always feels like.
Like, because even when you get somebody like Karen from Will and Grace,
yeah.
she, I think, has that same sort of... Maybe not, but, like, there's, yeah, they own it, and you're right. I think I always feel like, and I know you mentioned that Lisa Kudrow was Roz. I still don't quite think that she was the right, like, not, I don't think Lisa Kudrow could do it, but I never have quite felt that.
Yeah.
I think she's, Perry Gilpin is fine, but I'm always like, I feel like Roz was, like, a bigger character that they wrote down, like.
Yeah.
And she's never done anything else, like, has she? I just.
Yeah, she was on.
I don't
want to
hate paint on it. I'm sure somebody's.
Jeez, she was on an ABC Family drama for like 4 years, I think.
Yeah,
like more recently because I did a lot of research. But it always just feels like they decided it's funny if we just make, if we can use Roz the Beagle to make slut jokes. But
yeah.
They never really write her as being one.
Yeah.
She's always written as like she just goes on dates.
Right, Bulldog.
Yeah,
the slut
is
and
like
nobody
the
ever
aggressive, like,
yeah,
asshole,
right?
Like, gross, always lecherous,
yeah.
And honestly, like Frasier probably sleeps around with way more, has more sexual partners than Roz is shown having.
Oh yeah, totally.
And I think if they had, if they just showed her actually going on more dates,
yeah.
Because I also wonder if the slutty jokes came before they ever even showed her going on a date. Which I feel like is the wrong way to do it. Like, if you're going to make that have a choice with the character, have the character own it and be confident in it.
Yeah. Because
otherwise it just feels like they're punching down.
Right.
And also show it. Like, have her actually, like, go on dates and be like, yeah, I got two dates tonight. I'm in charge.
Right. Or have it be that they keep doing that and she's like,
guys,
the opposite.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm trying to get a date.
I have one boyfriend.
Yeah,
I've had him for like a couple months.
Right. I could,
like,
see that
sort
of like that working. But otherwise it's like, oh, here's this woman in a good job who's like put together, nothing in her, like, she dresses no differently than
Jamie
Lee.
No, that's
nothing.
She doesn't even dress.
There's no sort of telegraphing that this is happening.
Yeah.
It's just very strange. But that feels dated. And then there are a couple, like, I feel like there are a few clunkers, like, joke-wise, like, when he's like, I guess I should owe the crab cop.
I'm going to the John. Order me a beer. Oh, gee, Dad, for a moment there, I thought you were going to surprise me and order a glass of wine. For a moment, I thought you were going to surprise me and button your yap. I'd order him the crab cocktail, but I'm afraid the irony would be lost on him.
Oh, that's a bad Frasier joke. That's like a bad joke.
Yeah.
But it's also a bad Frasier joke. Because it's like the crab cocktail, the irony would. It's like,
it is so
this is what people hate about Frasier.
Get back to smashing eels, man.
Yeah.
Ugh.
But there are a few of those that were a little like, oof.
So I do have some trivia.
Oh, great.
But I got you picked. But I don't know what to do with those tosses.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again.
Trivia time. So the ratings for this episode, 17.9 million viewers.
Wow.
Watched this episode.
Wow.
17.9.
Jeez.
It was ranked number 12 for the week.
God.
With that many viewers.
Jeez.
The top five shows in that week, this first one, we're going to have to talk about.
Okay.
Number five. Naomi and Winona.
Wait, the Judds?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
a movie about the lives of Winona Judd and Naomi Judd, played by actors, not played by them. Two-part miniseries is number five.
That is fantastic.
I think is the most 1995 thing
Do TV movies happen anymore?
I think they're called limited series now.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Big Little Lies 20 years ago would have been, like, a miniseries at the
oh.
end or something. Yeah, and you would have cut, like, those 10 episodes down to, like, 3 2-hour specials.
Oh,
boom.
Wow.
Because also, speaking of the miniseries, the number 4 most watched show that week was a part of The Langoliers.
Oh, whoa.
Back when they used to just do
Jeez,
Stephen King
that's
stuff.
Crazy.
I think it's because this episode aired in May. And so the number 3 episode is Seinfeld, number 2 is Friends, and 1 is ER. So those are all season finales.
Okay.
So, and this is Frasier's penultimate episode.
Right,
so I think
they
like,
usually do, like, a fun mess-around episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is also why, like, I was wondering how Friends beat Seinfeld, but 31.3 million viewers.
Gosh.
But it's because that is the season 1 finale of their, like, meteoric rise season 1.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
Oof.
That is so nuts. I think I was thinking about it, why Frasier was able to be on air, and I think some of it is just like, well, it's on.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
there's
like,
not much else.
Yeah, it's funny, and it's on, and I mean, nobody's going to all these, I mean, obviously, we could talk for hours about how the media landscape's been fractured,
yeah.
and you kind of watch your own things, and you can really
avoid.
We don't
have anything in common anymore,
no.
and it's like.
You can't even talk
which
about.
I mean, like, if you look at this, I don't know. See, part of me wonders, I get worried about how the older I'm getting, I just keep going, things were better back in the 90s.
Yeah.
But it's also because we're now living in the result of a very, very, very divided and niche entertainment market. We're
yeah.
now, like, Red America and Blue America don't have to talk to each other about literally anything. We do not share literally anything, and we don't have to share literally anything. And
right.
things can be successful without having to. Whereas you look at this top 5, and it's
yeah.
like ER, Friends, Seinfeld, The Langoliers, and Naomi and Winona.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's kind of all over the map.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, like, right below that is, like, Grace Under Fire and Home Improvement. We're in the
yeah.
top 10. So.
It's just hard, because I think,
better?
Like. Yeah,
way,
I think
I don't
it
know.
Is better, because we have. You're right. Having those common cultural touchstones, it's dangerous not to have them to a certain extent,
yeah.
because it's like. You can talk about the weather, you can talk about sports, but if you don't want to talk about any of those, you can talk about, like. I mean, that's what people did. Like,
Home
did you see MASH,
yeah.
you know, or did you see Seinfeld or whatever?
And now we have that with, like, The Voice and Bachelorette
right.
and stuff, which is not artistically rewarding in any way.
No.
Like, it's not...
It doesn't elevate.
Those aren't narratives that are, like, challenging anything. They're
right.
reality shows.
Yeah.
In some cases, they're perpetuating the worst thing.
Yes.
You know, like, I mean, ABC just canceled Last Man Standing. Like, Tim Allen had a sitcom for 6 years on ABC
yeah.
that I never heard about.
Well, I mean,
we talked about
The Big Bang Theory, which was
yeah.
has been the number one show for, like,
years.
Like number one comedy, and I haven't seen
an episode
of it, which is crazy. If it was 10 or 15 years ago, and I wanted to get into comedy, people would think I was crazy
yeah.
that I wasn't watching it. But now it's like, you don't have to watch it.
And you're in some circles perceived as better for not having watched
right.
it.
Right.
You're like, oh, okay, you're not a
yeah.
dumb.
But
it's
now people don't even
thing.
Know, like...
I mean,
if I had said to my other people, like, have you seen Master of None? People would be like, what?
Yeah.
You know, or like, even explaining UCB for years, I still have trouble. I'm like, it's like a theater. Do you know Amy Poehler? And a lot of people would be like, no.
Wow,
and
yeah.
You're like,
and you're like, but in
oh,
our world, Parks and Rec and SNL
Yeah, but
are...
like, she was on SNL, and they're like, And then I'd have to go, you know, Mean Girls, the cool mom? And they're like, oh.
Yeah.
And so now it seems crazy that I'm invoking, like, a bit part in Mean
yeah.
Girls is like, she's like a comedy icon.
Yeah, she's
but
one
it's
of
like,
successful.
It's always very humbling to kind of make those connections. And these aren't people who are like, I'm from Atlanta, and these are people who are, you know, like, well-educated.
Yeah.
They just don't consume as much media as
yeah.
we do.
Which you could see, I don't know, you could see a media landscape now, if it was much more unified, where you could have, like, a night of comedy that would be, like, Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
Master of None, like, 30, like, you could, because
yeah.
there are less options.
Yeah,
and maybe
yeah.
Master of None would be a multicam show,
right.
But still, a multicam show that tackles the kind of issues that Master of None does is very, very important to the entire world to see.
Yeah.
Either, even
like
if
the
you're,
Carmichael show,
yeah.
I think, was trying to do that. To
which I've still
extent.
Not watched, but
me
I
neither.
Should, because I think that's probably good, and I love multicam shows.
Yeah.
So,
anyway, that's what
no.
that's what I'm like. Oh, Frasier succeeded because in some part it was sort of like what like
yeah.
There's nothing else to watch. I mean, there was more stuff to watch, but it was like I think initially like yeah, you're gonna put up with this until you like learn to love it because it is well done.
The other things coming that night were like things you would want to watch, and so you would just take in things.
And it did a really great job of being both, like we said, referencing Steinbeck and then clubbing eels. It really runs the gamut. It's hard to, and I think people when they shit on it, it's like people drinking glasses of sherry and like making witty wordplay. And that's not really the show.
And if it happens on the show, you're supposed to laugh at them for being so snooty.
Yeah.
Which is a very interesting dynamic that it walks.
Yeah.
So out of everyone in this episode, who would you say had the must-see performance? That's a hard...
Yeah. I have to say, I think it was David Hyde Pierce.
Yeah.
Because that veal toss, catching the veal on the plate, I had so much respect for that. He plays his game really well. He does the physical comedy more than Kelsey Grammer. I said Chelsea. Kelsey Grammer.
Country Grammar. Chelsey Grammer. Kelsey yeah. Grammer. The Grammar triplets.
God. Talk about a show.
I would love that. I guess I would say David Hyde Pierce, too. It was really hard for me to pick one.
Yeah.
Usually my MVPs for this show are Eddie and Martin.
Right. He was great.
But
I mean,
didn't have much to do.
No.
He had some good, like, zingers in there for, like, deflating them.
Yeah.
I love when he at the end, he, like, answers that call to be like, we have seats open. Would you like a seat, like, charred or not charred? Or, like, smoke damage or not smoke damage?
Yeah.
Ha-ha! And he just laughs so hard and blatantly at his children, which
right.
I love.
That's great. The other thing I thought he did great, and what I like about how they write him and how he performs it, is that he does the joke where he comes up to the bar, and he's like, how about them Supersonics, huh? And it's like, oh, he's self-aware that... This is from the second season. His character is self-aware that this bothers Frasier.
Yeah.
And he does it. He's not doing it... Like, there's a canniness to him that's, like, really... Nice to see.
He's a really cool audience surrogate in that way.
Yeah.
Like, he also knows that this is wrong, just like we do.
Yeah.
And he's going to knock him down because of it.
I think, I don't know. This was a hard one. I would say Jane Leaves just for the eel bop,
but she didn't
do anything else.
I'll go Jane Leaves just so I can have the other half of that veal routine.
There we go.
And also... The eel smack was great. And there's also a moment I didn't talk about when Frasier comes in first and Niles, Daphne, and Roz are arguing the very first time they argue. He comes in and Daphne, like, puts up her dukes like an old-timey boxer.
Yeah. That was...
right before he stops her.
Too.
And so I'm like, that's great. Jane Leaves has some really great choices here. And she also had a really good... story about her auntie's tea room.
Yes.
That was like really dark.
That
about
was
all these really dark specifics.
I love
so
it
like,
when
my
they
auntie
make...
up in the tea room.
I love
really
it when
great.
They get really dark. she always does that where it's like she has like an Angela's Ashes like backstory sort of.
Well, all her brothers are monsters.
Yeah.
Oof. Would you I forgot to even bring up what IMDb users rated this episode.
Oh, okay.
She's also 492 users on IMDb gave this a 9.0.
Huh.
Would you say higher or lower?
I would say maybe a smidge lower. I don't think it's... Well, I knew what it was as soon as you said it. It wasn't a Frasier episode that I was like, oh, right. And their first stuff is... And it's like, that stuff, watching that, it's like, oh, there's nothing on television like this.
No, there really isn't. There needs to be so much more.
I know. So, I don't know. I would say maybe 8.5.
I'll say 8.8, because when I said, when I read 9, I love this episode, and when I read 9 on IMDb, I did have a knee-jerk of like, oh, that high.
Yeah.
But I still say 8.8.
You're still great.
This is the number 11 best episode of Frasier, according to IMDb.
Oh, wow.
11. So it's just out of the top 10.
It's very good.
So based on all that, would you say that other people should, is this a must-see episode for general people?
I think people should, just to kind of... see what was possible, like, and comedically, I think it's stuff for us. It's like, because I love, I'm watching Kimmy Schmidt right now, I'm loving it. The joke writing is so great, but it doesn't get like, and I love improv shows that do this too, where it really climaxes. I know this is getting weird,
but when it climaxes,
but like, no, when you feel like a comic, like, well, we did it, And I always want improv shows to be where it's like, well, you have to black us out
at the highest.
But, like, I don't feel like a lot of I think a lot of modern shows sort of, like, peter out on a pretty good joke.
Yeah.
And a little, like, womp, you know, but, like, this just goes out so hard, and it builds to such a... I just think it'd be cool for people to see it.
The point I want to make, which opens up a whole other avenue of discussion that we can go down, of, like, if you don't like multicam sitcoms and think they are lesser than single cam,
yeah,
not worth your time, you don't understand why anyone would want to do them nowadays,
yeah,
this is the episode to watch, because you cannot do this episode in single cam.
Right.
You really cannot,
yeah,
because the whole point of this... You get the sense of pace and rhythm,
yeah,
and frenetic energy because,
yeah,
you know, it feels like it's all happening in live action,
right,
because the shots are longer,
yeah,
you're watching people walk from one room to another, and just the live theater feel of it. Having an audience there, I don't mind laugh tracks, and I think
no,
when a show is done well, you only notice it when a show is bad and not being,
right,
legitimately funny. And
you're
when a show,
right,
is legitimately funny, you don't notice it because you're also laughing.
Yeah.
It's not there. I always get mad. I don't think laugh tracks are there to tell you when to laugh.
Yeah.
I think they're there to really hammer home this, like, theatrical,
yeah,
performance and to feed off the actors.
Yeah.
And it really happens in this episode so well.
Right. I think it's also... and I've sometimes been a nasty one about
a little stinker
about multicam because I do love my 30 Rock.
Oh,
and
I love
Reza.
Them.
I love them, but I agree with you because I think it's not telling you when to laugh, but like it's giving you permission to laugh. Like, do you,
yeah,
know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah, yeah.
Like when you sit in a theater, have you ever been in in an improv show where you're like, I think this is funny. Nobody else is laugh. Like, it's a tough crowd.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like I can laugh. But if you get a few good laughers in there, the whole audience starts
opens
to,
up.
Like, opens up and, like, is ready to kind of receive the comedy.
Yeah.
And, but, yeah, I just, and there's a part of me, again, that old cranky, like, it's theater, damn it. Like,
yeah,
there's a part of me that, yeah, I just think, if the multicam does make a resurgence, it needs to do things like this.
Yes.
It can't be like, I think what people don't like are the Big Bang Theories and the Last Man Standing.
Which is just
like
not direct, not ambitious. Like,
yeah.
It's just a camera, three cameras, and they're all sitting. Because I've seen clips of Big Bang Theory, and it literally is just them sitting on sofas.
Yeah.
Like, there's
they're
nothing.
They're good performers, but yeah, I just think if you gotta... like, stretch the... I think they stretched themselves with these episodes. And
yeah.
Like, that's what... You know, we're... This is a... How old is this? Like...
So it's 22 years old.
Yeah, and we still were surprised and laughing at,
yeah,
it. And I think even... you know, I listened to the I Love Lucy episode. And these shows, I think part of why they resonate... And even the chuckles.
Yeah.
It's like that live... There's... It's the same reason we like live performance. There's like... something crackling about it and like lightning in a bottle about it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I wish that we could get, I wish somebody would kind of do that.
I will.
great.
There's also something about the way the episode is directed where I just realized this, that it's a lot of long shots because,
yeah,
and a lot of long takes because in a multicam situation, I don't think you can get that close on people, especially if they're moving around.
Yeah.
But if this was shot single cam, they would prepare for that and they would have tighter shots.
Yeah.
A lot more cutting. And I think that really messes up the rhythm.
Yeah.
So anyway, this was great.
Well, it also puts the onus on the director for single cam, and this is just like the actors and the, it's plays, it's,
yeah,
like the actors and the writers. The director
such
definitely plays a part, but I think
such a great showcase for performances.
Yeah.
Oh, guys, love multicam.
Yeah.
They're also really hard to write because I just tried to write a multicam pilot and they are hard.
That seems
beast.
really hard.
Yeah, so yeah, thank you so much for coming out here and talking about...
my distinct pleasure.
Frasier, a really weird episode of Frasier.
I'll be honest, I was like, I know we talked about doing this before, but then you were like, I want you to do Frasier. And I'm like, did you try to find the whitest person you knew? I was like, I accept.
Or the most upper crust.
I don't know.
Right,
no,
yeah,
no,
ritzy,
no.
Ritzy.
No,
got that
it's just
cat.
The name. It's,
yeah,
just the name.
Oh, Winston knew.
I know. I do feel like I Gil Chesterton or whatever.
Gil Chesterton.
Winston Noble, credit for Seattle.
So where can people find you on the internet if they want to scream at you about Frasier?
Yes, please do. I'm on Twitter at WinstonNoble.com, and then I also, or at WinstonNoble.com. God. And then I'm also, I do a show at UCB, if you ever want to come see it, on Saturday nights at 10:30, called Grandma's Ashes We Won't Tell. So it's a lot of fun. Come see it.
And how similar is that to this episode of Frasier?
Sort of. When we're cooking,
yeah.
When it feels right, then that's when it feels really, really good. It gets close.
Yeah.
It's still not as good because it's not written.
Yeah.
But that kind of like, that's what, yeah. Yeah.
That's what it is.
When it gets really, really good.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
And that does it for this week's episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guest, Winston Noble, for dropping by and talking about Frasier with me this week. Next week on the show, I'll finally be talking about the Bob Newhart Show. I'll be discussing the Bob Newhart Show episode Caged Fury, which is in Season 5, and it is Episode 2 of Season 5. Unfortunately, you're going to have to track that episode down using ways and means that I can't advise. Because you cannot stream this literally anywhere. You can find the first 3 seasons of Bob on Hulu and iTunes, but Season 5, shrug emoji. You can buy it on the DVD set on Amazon, which, you know, it's worthwhile. I'm sorry, guys, but it's a July 4th episode, so it is timely, and also the only July 4th sitcom episode that I can think of. Until then, you can follow the podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr, and at Must Have Seen TV. If you like what you've heard, please rate and review Must Have Seen TV in iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Brett White. You can read my words at Decider.com, which includes a look at 30 classic 90s sitcoms and where to stream them now. Frasier is available everywhere. Most of them are available nowhere. You can check out my sitcom t-shirts and stickers at tpublic.com/user/Brett White. The theme song is Patricia's Moving Picture by The Go Team. Thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Thanks to you for listening. And I'll see you next week on Must Have Seen TV.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.